This is Packer and Durham on ACCN and SiriusXM Channel 371.
I'm Mark Packer. My partner is Wes Durham. Mr. Durham, how are you? How was the weekend?
I'm well packed. Thanks. Good to be with you. And short week for programs. We're here Monday, Tuesday, and Wednesday to get you ready for the Thanksgiving holiday and another weekend of ACC football. But, you know, last weekend ended up being one of the weirder weekends we've seen in this conference's history, Pack. And it culminated on Saturday morning, I guess, with a game that wasn't even played.
Do you want to start? You want me to start?
Well, I mean, here's the deal. I have tried to sort this out chronologically over the last 24 to 36 hours, and I'm still not sure I got it all figured out yet. I think I'm close, but I don't think I have it all figured out yet.
Then let me
look. But I know Clemson and Florida State were scheduled to play at noon and didn't. How's that?
All right. You're giving me nothing. So let me tell you, here's the deal. Here's the deal. The first thing you got to do is you got to take emotion out of this, all right? Both sides are ticked off. I mean, they're livid. They're both upset. So take emotion and put it to the side, all right? Put it to the side. Number two, safety and health are priority one. We would all agree with that. All of us. I don't care what team you root for, what your favorite league is, whatever the case may be. In this world of the pandemic and COVID-19, safety and health of the student-athlete is priority one. So that's issue two.
Absolutely.
Issue three, I'll start with Clemson. They followed the protocols the entire week. They tested Sunday. They tested Wednesday. They tested Friday morning. And a particular player in question here had some symptoms in which they were concerned. They did all the correct protocols. They did additional antigen tests on Thursday, all negative tests. Team tests Friday morning. They get on a plane. They fly down to Tallahassee. They get the results after they arrive, find out that this one particular player has tested positive. So they follow the protocols. Right. They contact the ACC. They contact Florida State. We have an issue with a particular player. We need to have a conversation. And they do. All right? So Clemson follows all of their protocols. Number four. Florida State, their turn. They get the information. They go to their medical advisors. They follow all of their protocols to a T. To a T. So we get to Saturday morning, which is the norm. Now we're going to have a face-to-face conversation with the medical advisors and everybody else. The Atlantic Coast Conference gets the information. They sign off on it. Clemson gets the information and says, hey, listen, we have one guy. We've isolated. We've quarantined. We've done all the necessary protocols and followed it to a T. Florida State says, we have done exactly the same thing. And you know what? We're not comfortable moving forward to play at high noon on Saturday. Right. At that point in time, based on the way it's laid out amongst the ACC, the game gets postponed. Okay? At that point in time, everybody had done exactly what they were supposed to do. Everybody. Clemson, check, check, check. Florida State, check, check, check. The ACC, which, by the way, does not determine whether the game is played or not. It's got to be mutually agreed upon by the two parties. And this would be true if it was Clemson, Florida State, BC, Virginia, A or B. Again, take the emotion out of this. Because like I said, if you're a Florida State fan watching this, you're going to be upset. If you're a Clemson fan watching this, you're still upset. I get that. So take that away. All right? It's A and B. So as of noon Saturday, based on the protocols that are in place by the ACC, everybody did exactly what they were supposed to do. Everyone. Now here is the issue, in my opinion. You can't blame Clemson. You can't blame Florida State as of noon Saturday. Can't do it. But here is the issue. At that point in time, Clemson spent over $300,000 to get down to Tallahassee. They've done all the boxes are checked. Check, 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 check. Florida State, check, check, check. At some point in time, you have to look at every option to play the game. If you can't play at noon on Saturday, hey, are there any options? Well, according to Clemson, there were a bunch. We could test again. We could play Saturday night. I'll tell you what we'll do. We'll take care of the bill, and we'll stay Sunday. Matter of fact, we'll stay Monday. You've got to figure out a way to play the game. At what point in time, given the protocols in place, do both sides go, hey, we're good? Now, if you test everybody and it comes back, whatever the tests are, I don't know what they're going to be, and everybody's cool with it, you play the game. But you cannot, right, in this day and age, have a team travel, spend $300,000, offer multiple options to play the game, and you get a no, no, no. That is where I have an issue. I think the protocols in place by the ACC are pretty self-explanatory. Now, you may say, hey, listen, why do they test on Friday? You know, for teams that have to travel, why don't they test Thursday? That way you could get the information back Friday by a certain time. And if there is a problem, for argument's sake, hey, you can hold that player out, or it can be discussed before you get on any plane or bus or however means you travel to get to your next game. That's a totally different discussion, by the way, of whether or not Thursday should be the day or Friday. The protocols in place by the ACC are pretty self-explanatory. Everything up till noon Saturday was done correctly. I just find it hard to believe that today, again, take emotion out of this, that you could have a team travel that far, spend that much money, offer to stay for 48 more hours, do all the tests, and we don't have the game yet. Because I would tell you, in my opinion, under that scenario, that if every team in America took the position that Florida State did, we would never have played a game this year in football, basketball, soccer, lacrosse, field hockey. I mean, there will always be a risk associated when you try to play sports in the pandemic. Always. Always. There had been a precedent set. We'd already had a game this year that we found out that, you know what, somebody was tested positive during the week. The other school said, hey, we're cool with it. He's not playing. We'll play Saturday. So a precedent had actually already been set in the league. But beside all that, you still have to figure out a way to take all the options available and see if you can play the game. On Monday morning, I don't get the sense that that was the case with the options. It sounds like everything was no, no, no. And that, to me, is problematic as we move forward to try to figure out how is this not going to happen again. It's not shocking, in my opinion, that at some point in time this year during the college football season, and I've said this on radio every Friday show, every Friday before I say goodbye, I say, tomorrow morning, be sure you check the ticker, because you know at some point in time we're going to have a Saturday cancellation. It was inevitable that this was going to happen.
There you go.
Inevitable. Mm-hmm. So you've got to at least be in a position to understand, hey, have you exhausted every option to try to get the game in? And if you can't get it in, you can't get it in. And that's going to happen. Listen, we had 18 cancellations. There were 62 games scheduled last week in college football. We had 18 cancellations or postponements. It's going to be a high wire act. This is not a matter of blame game. This is not one of those, it's your fault, it's your fault. You've got to figure out a way to get it done. And if you can't, you can't. But it's amazing to me that the options that were given to get this game in based on a singular positive test, that there could not be some kind of solution to play the game on Sunday or Monday. That's my opinion. I'm done.
No, and I think you're right. I think the element that you're facing in this is the details and the initial news information that was released or reported out of this was it complete? No, it was a moving target, like the entire football season's been in many respects, right? So we're trying to get our arms around it, but as you said, you got to kind of take the emotion out of it. And for Clemson and Florida State fans, to a degree coaches, that's been tough. Dabo Swinney stepped to the microphone yesterday.
This game was not canceled because of COVID. COVID was just an excuse to cancel the game. And to be honest with you, I don't think it has anything to do with their players. I have no doubt that their players wanted to play and would have played. And same with the coaches. To me, the Florida State administration forfeited the game. And if they want to play Clemson, in my opinion, they need to come to Clemson or they need to pay for all expenses. Other than that, there's no reason for us to play them. We were there, we were ready, and we met the standards.
I would point out too, Wes, and I've heard, I wish I had a dollar for both sides and even people that have no association with the league or the teams who have an opinion on, oh, they were just afraid to play. That is a crock. Let me just say this. These student athletes have, in my lifetime, student athletes have never gone further beyond the call of duty to have an opportunity to play. Forget wins and losses. Just the opportunity to compete. I tip my hat to every one of them. Men, women, right. Olympic sports, football, you name it. To go what they have gone through during this pandemic to stay, number one, healthy, safe, and just have the chance to compete. If I hear one more time from somebody, man, they were afraid to play. That is the biggest nonsense, cop-out, BS line I've ever heard. These kids want to play. I have no doubt that Florida State wanted to play. Coaches, players, and everybody. You want to play the game. This is why you work so hard. This is why you go through these crazy times and trying to stay safe and healthy. You want to play. So the next time you hear somebody tell you at the water cooler, on a radio show, on Twitter, oh, they were afraid. Maryland was afraid to play Ohio State. Florida State was afraid to play Clemson. Nonsense. That is total BS. You want to play the games. So you figure out, hey, here are our options. Do any of these work? But can you guarantee today, any game ever played, that there's not going to be a positive test? No, you cannot. That is impossible to do. Impossible.
Yeah. I think the aspect you bring up is interesting in that there have been games already played this year where we know from the testing and all the other things, the inventory of available personnel was going to be close to the limit.
Right.
There have been at least three ACC games that I know of where one more test on that Saturday morning. How many times have we had coaches come on here and say, you're holding your breath, right?
Right.
To make sure that you get the all clear from testing. Because they knew if they had one more positive test, that one positive test could trigger contact tracing that would take them below the minimum to play.
Right. Manny Diaz.
That's how badly they want to play.
Right. I mean, for example, Manny Diaz, Virginia Tech, Miami game said, you know, I'm holding my breath Saturday morning. We were literally a test away from not being able to play. You know what? Virginia Tech and Pitt this weekend had 26 players not available to play this week. So the thing in question with this Clemson-Florida State game involved a singular player, happened to be a backup. And it didn't matter to me if he was the starting quarterback, backup, whatever. You followed the protocols. I thought Florida State followed their protocols to a T. I thought Clemson did exactly the same thing. All right, so you can't figure out a way to play at noon Saturday. Well, you got a team sitting there in a hotel that spent $300K that's willing to take every test known to man to play the game Saturday night, anytime Sunday, even wait till Monday. You've got to figure out a way to get that game in. And if there's a school in the league, Wes, in my opinion, that should understand the importance of, hey, we just don't have $300,000 laying around. I mean, that's all, in this day and age of the pandemic, where every single athletic department is facing not problematic, serious financial problems. Serious. Here's Florida State, who's already had 20% budget cuts, furloughed employees. You've got to figure out a way to get that game in. I would tell you, of Florida State's home schedule, that was the most important game they're going to play. You got to get the game in.
Right.
If you're Clemson, hey, we're spending $300K to go down. Well, you expect us to do this again? I don't know. And again, we're going to have Dan Radakovich on later on. I thought both schools did exactly what they were supposed to do. The ACC, based on what they've laid out, did what they did. Hey, they gave the green light to game to be played. So if there's a problem somewhere for the game not to be played, you've got to, instead of figuring out, hey, your fault, my fault, forget that. You must figure out a solution. The solution was, hey, would you be comfortable if it turns out these guys were tested and we don't have a problem? If the answer is yes, great. Guys, are you willing to test? Cool. Everybody test, see what the results are. Let's go play. Now, if you can't make it work, hey, you can't make it work. And that apparently is where we are. So, again, you got to take the emotion out of it. This is a team A versus team B. Don't worry about records. Don't worry about any of that nonsense. That all goes by the wayside. And I don't want to hear any more about they were afraid to play. That is garbage. Total garbage. Garbage. So there you go.
Florida State's Mike Norvell with Don Davenport on Saturday morning before the ball game, right after the cancellation was announced.
Well, I can tell you, it all goes back to the health and well-being of the student athletes. You know, there was discussion last night about results from the test that was had yesterday. I know the medical advisors, were able to go back and forth with that. And I can tell you that within our program throughout this whole season, I mean, there's been a strict policy and procedure in place. We've had players and coaches that have missed games due to even just showing symptoms who further, at later dates came back with the negative test. But, we're all about building the trust and the understanding to keep our players safe. I can tell you that we woke up this morning ready to play this game, and that was when I was asked, that's what I expressed to our advisors, that we were ready to play the game. They went through the proper procedures and protocols that we have, and then the decision was made to postpone it. And I can tell you that we want to play this game, and we're looking forward to both teams have an open date there in December, and we would love that opportunity.
I don't doubt that Florida State was ready to play Saturday morning. I have no doubt about that. Players, coaches, everything else. And, right. And Florida State, again, followed their protocol to a T. I have no problem with any of that as of noon Saturday. My issue is, after the window of noon to 3, was there an opportunity for this game to be played? That's my question of the big picture. Now, Dabo Swinney last night, I thought, brought up something that was really interesting that I didn't give this any thought until it was mentioned. And I'm just going to read this. He said, quote, "It's also why, as a league, we voted to expand the travel roster from 72 to 80 in expectation that there would be positives on Friday so that you can take more guys to be available. No one ever had the illusion that there wouldn't be a positive on a Friday, so that's why the roster was expanded. Anytime a guy is positive, whether it be a Monday test, a Wednesday test, a Friday test, that person has been practicing and playing prior to being positive. In fact, we can all test negative on Friday, and that doesn't mean someone doesn't turn positive before kickoff on Saturday, and we've all known that. The standard to cancel a game was not met. A guy testing positive on Friday does not cancel a game. I was on every committee call for months since March, and that was never the case. Never once was it said that if a team had a player test positive on a Friday, that the game would be canceled. The only thing that we talked about in canceling the game was not having enough scholarship guys or at least 7 offensive linemen." I think that's very important.
It also goes to a comparative statement for Saturday night, where Mississippi State elected to play in Athens under the 53.
Right.
In an SEC game. And we've talked about it. There have been games that have skated the edge in terms of availability and inventory in those certain areas. But this also brings to light the medical protocol. That medical advisory group, remember that group that we've discussed so much since June, that we're going to have a very prominent role in the way that this ACC season has unfolded so far in the fall sports, and certainly as we continue into what will more than likely develop to be a basketball season and other winter sports, whatever that looks like, and on into the spring until we feel confident that we've overcome the virus. The idea, though, that the medical advisories couldn't come to an agreement, that's the one that is probably – that's the piece of this that we don't have any kind of real perspective for, because that's the first time we've heard of that, right?
Well,
but it is interesting. Both sides wanted to play the game, Tupac.
Well, I don't know about, well, the teams wanted to play. One medical advisory wanted to play. One medical advisory did not want to play. I think that needs to be differentiated, because to me, that is different. I have no doubt the teams and the coaches wanted to play. That's a given. That's a given. Like I said, I thought both protocols were reached by what the schools had placed. And keep in mind, the protocol in the state of Florida could be very different than the protocol in the state of South Carolina, right? The states are operating at a different level. And keep that in mind, too. Like I said, for folks, Clemson fans are going to blame Florida State. Florida State's going to blame that's a, like I said, take the emotion out of all this. Take it out.
Right.
You know, smart people can get in the room and figure out a solution. The problem was we didn't reach a solution. That was my issue with all of this weekend. You had no solution after 3 o'clock on Saturday, and I thought there were many options to go down the road, in my opinion.
Yeah. So Eric McClain joins us at 8. Dan Radakovich at 9, the Clemson athletic director. Pitt basketball coach Jeff Capel, all a part of the Big Monday show here on Packer and Durham. And when we come back, we'll kind of dig into the ball games that were played this past weekend, including a dramatic finish in Raleigh. And Dave Doran's Wolfpack continued to march on. And the other night, they waited till the end to snap the second longest winning streak, I guess, in in the FBS. Liberty's 10-game win streak goes by the boards. We'll cover the Pack and more when Packer and Durham continues.
The Packer and Durham Podcast. Here's Mark Packer and Wes Durham.
Packer and Durham on a Monday morning. 844-SAY-ACCN is the number if you're in the mood. Eric McClain coming up here at the top of the hour. Lots to talk about. People still buzzing about a game that was not played. But, Wes, we will talk about games that were played. Again, it was not a great week for the conference. COVID had a pretty good week against the ACC. I mean, we had games canceled left and right, including on game day. And like I said, you knew it was inevitable. Eventually, we were going to get a Saturday morning breaking story. You knew it was going to happen. But, nevertheless, NC State Liberty. We'll lead off with a non-conference game for Dave Doran. His second win this year against a ranked team. And I will tell you before you get started, I thought for sure this game would be played in the 30s. And I'm sitting there watching that game Saturday night going, this. It goes back to what I say all the time. The more I read, the more I study, the dumber I get watching football on Saturdays. Over and under, of course, the smart people in Vegas said it was around 65. I thought that sounded about right. First 35 wins. Yeah. How about first of 15 wins? Yep. But a terrific win for NC State.
It was a great win. It comes down to the end as well. Had a little drama to it throughout the ball game, but the Wolfpack snaps Liberty's 10-game win streak on Saturday night at Carter-Finley Stadium in Raleigh. And NC State goes to Dave Doran, as you mentioned, gets his second win against a ranked opponent this year. There's the block kick at the end, a field goal that would have won it off the foot of Barbier, same way the game ended up in Blacksburg. And you know what? They get the great block from Bi Jones, and that seals the win for the Wolfpack. And to be honest with you, Mark, the way the ball game was kind of being played, it started out as it was going to be really, really in the trenches, and it stayed that way. I was surprised it didn't get more explosive. And there were big plays, don't get me wrong, but in terms of the way the game tempered itself throughout the night, that game was that was a street fight and played right there in the middle of the field.
Wolfpack had a safety in the game. We saw the bone appear, which was beautiful from that perspective.
Yeah.
I was just stunned. I just thought for sure we got a little 35-31 kind of thing going on here. It was as far from that as you could get. State did a good job against Willis.
Right.
He's a really dangerous quarterback. Wolfpack backs ran well, needless to say. Person was really good. Knight was good. You know, at the end of the game, you made a play. It literally came down to a play. Blocked the field goal for the W, and for NC State, keep telling you, the second half of that schedule looked pretty good. And now all of a sudden, NC State staring 8-3 right in the face. They can close the deal. Pretty good year in Raleigh.
Yep. Yep. I agree. So the big win for the Wolfpack, 15-14. They're off to Syracuse. They'll see the Orange on Saturday. It's part of our triple header here on ACC Network at noon. Let's go to Heinz Field. Here come the Panthers, Pack. They had that little brief hibernation where they lost four in a row, and since then, Pittsburgh's come back strong, haven't they?
Well, Kenny Pickett makes a difference. They're totally different offensively. He came back there and sling it. But the thing that impressed me, though, they ran the football. We've been saying all year, Pitt can't run the ball. Well, they did against Virginia Tech. And the flip side of this is Virginia Tech. Winless in November. 47 spot they give up. I mean, listen, we talked about 1-5 at Heinz Field. Now they're 1-6. When Virginia Tech's good, they give you the look. When they're bad, they give you Saturday. Pitt just said, hey, sorry.
Yeah.
We're just going to stuff you, and we're going to stuff you all day, and there's nothing you can do about it. And I don't know what to tell you about Virginia Tech. I did not expect them to be 4-5. And so we harped last week, Wes, they got 2 weeks to get ready for Clemson and then in-state rival Virginia. They got a sweep to have a winning record, and I would never have guessed that at any point in time in March, April, May, June, July, August, September, October. Yep. Did not see that happening to the Hokies. I really didn't.
By the way, Pittsburgh scores 40 or more in consecutive games for the first time since 2016, fifth time since 2004, scoring 40 or more in consecutive games. DJ Turner, by the way, one of the real interesting stories and probably hasn't been talked about enough, comes up with 15 catches in the ball game. Those 15 catches won off the school record.
And again, Addison goes down, you know, so all right, who's going to step up and make plays? DJ Turner. And when we go through the best of and the worst of the weekend, you're going to see this again because DJ Turner was ridiculous. Anybody, yep, pay attention. Hey, guess what? Seven's wide open again. You can tackle him, you know. What a game, yep, for DJ Turner. I mean, unbelievable.
Yeah, he'll,
Wes, I'm going to give you one other
stat.
He's going
to join us on Wednesday's show, and he's got a fascinating story, by the way, Pack. We're going to talk about his story on Wednesday with him, but suffice it to say that when our friend E.J. Borghetti put together the media guide up there at Pittsburgh for the season, DJ Turner wasn't in it. In fact, Pittsburgh fans can thank Kevin Warren for DJ Turner.
That's right. I'm going to give you another crazy stat. I was messing around with this yesterday. Virginia Tech goes winless in November. All right. Ofer.
Right.
There are, and you're going to think I've fallen down a flight of steps with what I'm about ready to tell you. There are seven teams in the ACC that have not won a game in November. Wake, Duke, Syracuse, Virginia Tech, Florida State, Georgia Tech, Clemson have not won a game in November. That is called COVID football. Between losses, open dates, postponements, cancellations, dog ate my homework, we don't want to play, whatever you come up with, seven teams with a zero in the win column in November.
Georgia Tech hasn't played a game in November.
Therefore, they're winless, Wes.
But they're the only one that hasn't actually attempted a game in November, correct?
I understand. I heard you. And there are six others that have not won a game in November.
I understand that part, too. But we have one that hasn't played, and we have six others that are winless in November?
They're all winless in November. Seven of the 15 teams in the ACC have not won a game in November yet. Again, it's only November 23rd. Knock on wood. Hopefully everybody wants to play. We'll get some more games in this week. Some folks can maybe snap some streaks. But Virginia Tech's going to end up winless in November. And for a team that had such huge aspirations as a potential Charlotte-bound team on December 19th, I don't think anybody expected that from Virginia Tech.
No, I think you're right about that. And it's been a tough ride for Justin Fuente. The Hokies got 260 yards from Hendon Hooker, including a long ball to Trey Turner for a score. But another interception, second straight game with an interception after having three in his first five of the season. And you mentioned this, Pack, week off and then Clemson and the Commonwealth Cup to close, right?
Good luck. Play hard. stay safe.
Yeah.
That's trouble.
Yeah. All right. Quick reminder to you, all ACC tonight here on ACC Network. Kelsey Riggs and Dallin Cuff gather around. Eric McClain joins them as well to reveal their top six in the conference. Dallin discusses how confident he is there will be an NCAA tournament, and they'll look back to 36 years ago at the Orange Bowl. Doug Flutie's Miracle Pass. Tonight at 8 o'clock, right here on ACC Network, streaming live on the ESPN app. When we come back, Scott Satterfield's team threw a shutout on Friday night, and Virginia beat the Fighting Lance Barrows on Saturday. All that and more when Packer and Durham continue on a Monday.
Packer and Durham. This is the Packer and Durham podcast.
Packer and Durham on a Monday, 844-SAY-ACCN is the number for the program. As I mentioned, Eric McClain coming up here as he normally does on Mondays at 8 a.m. sharp. Not ish, sharp. He'll be here, top of the hour. All right, other games of note. There weren't many. We only had four games in the league. One took place on a Friday night, though, Wes. We talked about both Louisville and Syracuse coming through the tunnel going, I think we can win this game. Ay. Syracuse. That bottom line at the end of the night was ugly. But for Louisville, defense played well, scored a bunch of points, and they went throwback unis on us. Throwbacks. What'd you think of those?
I kind of liked them, by the way. I kind of liked those. Cream pants, the white helmets, old school Johnny U look. I like that for the Cards. And Louisville backed it up. Combination of guys running the rock. Orange turned it over a little too much, in my opinion, and only 137 total yards of offense. They struggled in Jacobian Morgan's second start, and Louisville kind of made it look easy, to be honest with you. Malik Cunningham was solid again, and the Orange off to a 1-8 start, worst 9-game start in 15 years for a Syracuse program. But nice win for Louisville.
You get the W, you move on to the next week the best way you can. And for Syracuse, we just got to get this thing to the finish line, right? There's still a road trip to Notre Dame stuck in there. You get them this week on your broadcast. It has been a rough, rough ride for the Orange. Even before we got to the kickoff, for the first one, it's just been difficult between stadium being worked on, fans, no fans, opt-outs. Not comfortable with the testing protocol. I mean, you name it. Dino Babers has been through it in terms of injuries, opting out. Man, it's been a zoo in Syracuse. So, again, 1-8, that was not what the doctor ordered coming after what happened a year ago. You got to get back to the drawing board. But offensively, they've got a long, long way to go.
Yeah, Pac, the thing that you, when you watch Syracuse, you see young guys, right? I mean, Sean Tucker was back in the lineup the other night. Jacobian Morgan at quarterback. You see some young guys on defense. I think there are clearly some pieces there. But this has been about never really being able to construct any kind of positive vibe or momentum in this fall, right? It just feels like they've never been able to flip that switch, right?
Right.
And that's, I got to believe, one of the things that's probably most frustrating about this entire fall campaign. Look, I feel for everybody involved in this that here comes Tony White to coordinate the defense. And I think there's, like I said, I think there's some young guys there that have made some plays. Thompson being one of them, the linebacker, who I think's got some real potential. The injury to Tommy DeVito. And look, it was already a hard fight. The injury to DeVito, and then all of a sudden Dylan Markowitz and Jacobian Morgan being asked to go take quarterback snaps after Rex Culpepper was not as effective as I think they were hoping for. The inconsistency up front in the offensive line. I think you can learn some things from this, but it's been a headbanger now. You just want to drop your head. And you can't do that if you're Dino Babers. You got too much pride. You're too good as a coach. And you got Sterling Gilbert there to handle the offense. You got Tony White to handle the defense. But you're going to have to look at kind of see, hey, where are we, you know, what's happened here and why did it happen? Is it just what we've had to go through with some of the pandemic protocols and some of the things and not able to put the offense in on, put the defense in and all the young kids involved and once injuries hit and opt-outs and things like that, did that cause this or is there something functional about it? And I think that's a fair question you've got to ask and be honest with yourself because you know you've got the capability to have a successful program. But this year is not going to be it, and it comes on the heels of a frustrating year last season. So, in other words, I guess you could say it's a double-down effect, but Syracuse, not they're much better than they're playing. There's no doubt about that. But it's incumbent upon those guys to do a little introspection as to why.
The only thing I'd tell you is I think of Dino Babers' teams, even before he got to Syracuse, high-flying, pace, offense, go, 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 go. Hey, they may not win the game, but they would be entertaining and score. That's Dino Babers football.
That's right.
And when you watched him Friday night, for folks that watched, when you start talking about no points, three turnovers again, six completed passes, seven first downs, it is almost anti-Dino Babers football. I mean, it's hard to watch. And you mentioned all the injuries, the opt-outs, young people playing. You're just going through one of those spells where, quite frankly, almost everywhere you turn, you go, I just don't know if that's a solution. And you get through a year, which has been so trying on everybody, whether you're ranked in the top five of the country or you're going through a Syracuse kind of year, and it gets tough. You got the holidays coming up. You're trying to get through a semester. Your team's all beat up. Guys have opted out. Things haven't gone right. I mean, it's easy to sit there and go, hey, let's just get this thing over with. And for Louisville, the flip side of this is, hey, they played hard. They came to play. That was a game they thought they could win, and they took care of business. Even with some guys out, we've been talking about Louisville's upside on the offensive side, and if the defense could get just a little bit better, right? Just a little bit better. And they've been wildly inconsistent, and Satterfield will be the first one to tell you. Friday night, they kind of gave you a dose of, hey, here's what can happen if we put everything together. And again, you take the win, you move on, and kind of build on this thing. But Louisville's a talented team. They just have not been able to figure out the defensive side. But on Friday night, they had no issues with Syracuse.
Yeah. And you know what? If you got anything out of it, you saw some components in the run game. No, not as explosive as Javian Hawkins. Great catch by Tutu Atwell, by the way, who made some plays. But if you're Louisville, you saw a little bit of the future behind the opt-out of Hawkins in terms of where you're going to go running back. That had to make you feel pretty good.
Right.
Offensive line played well. A group that, you know, with Brown and Bone, they've been trying to get set up. Brown and Boone, rather, they've been trying to get set up, especially a tackle. So, you feel okay kind of about where they're going. And that's a good, you know, boost to get you going to the close of the regular season. And, you know, it's been a trying time for Scott Satterfield, too. They battled, my goodness, have they battled, on and off the field. So both teams, somebody needed something good to happen, as we said on Friday's show, and it ended up being a good night for Louisville. And we'll see what Syracuse does. Does the Orange have, you know, against NC State on Saturday? You know, NC State coming in feeling pretty good. Wolfpack will have to tend to their knitting a little bit, too, as it relates to the mental makeup of that ballgame on Saturday at the Dome.
I think NC State will feel just fine going to the Dome. Now, you still got to go win. First of all, we got to play. Let's emphasize this again.
Right.
We have to play the game. It's only Monday. Believe me, I suspect a lot of craziness between now and kickoff for the fourth consecutive week. But, you know, if you're Syracuse, you just got to get to the finish line. I mean, you got a road trip to Notre Dame still left in this. So it won't be easy.
Yeah.
For the Orange, it hasn't been all year, so there's no reason why that's going to change in the next couple weeks.
Virginia was a winner. They beat Abilene Christian. Cavaliers hung 55 on the ACU crowd who came to Charlottesville, but it ended up being a costly situation for the Cavaliers because they lost one of their best players on defense during the game. Brennan Armstrong was solid, 383 yards and four scores, and he threw the ball around, ran around a little bit too. Looked pretty good, I thought, Mark.
First Virginia quarterback ever to have three touchdown passes of 50-plus. Ever since Thomas Jefferson wanted to play football, that's never happened before on the grounds. It did Saturday. Good to see this dude back too, by the way. 81. That yeah, 6 foot Davis. Seven wide receiver for that freak I called, man. That dude's a freak. He's unbelievable, that guy. It's going to be great.
90-yard touchdown catch for Lavelle Davis. Deshaun Perry, by the way, another pick six for the Cavaliers. Noah Taylor last week, Deshaun Perry this week for Virginia. He got to break the rock as well. Bad news, though, for
Charles
Virginia.
Charles Snowden, man.
The outstanding senior linebacker. Yep, Charles Snowden broke his ankle. He is going to miss the rest of the season for the Cavaliers. Goes down on this play right here. I had a chance to exchange a note with him last night, Pac, and just wished him the best. Outstanding young man.
Sure is.
His dad put something together on social media last night. Charles Snowden's going to make an impact, folks. And pleasure to talk to. We look forward to visiting with him again down the road. But our best wishes to Charles Snowden. His Virginia career is over, but his impact in Virginia clearly not over.
For anybody that has seen,
for
anybody that has seen his interviews on our show, he's been on a couple times. Forget football a second.
Yep.
All right. I mean, we talk sports. That's what we do. But forget football a second. And hopefully, if he wants to pursue that angle, he'll have a chance to do it. But Charles Snowden is going to be an impact person in life. And if you have not gathered that from the two interviews that we've done with him this year, this is a guy that wants to make a change. He wants to have an impact on making society better. He is a guy that you would, if you were a businessman, you would hire him tomorrow. And no matter what you allowed him to do, he'll be better than you expect. That guy is somebody. And yeah. When I heard the news that he had gotten hurt Saturday, it was sickening because, I mean, these are kids. You root for everybody to have success. But this is a special person, and he is going to be incredibly successful, whether it involves football or not. And he's a guy that you'd want to sit there and say, you know what, I'm going to ride his coattails because that guy's going to take me to where we need to go. And we wish him the absolute best, speedy recovery, and he is going to be great in life, Charles Snowden.
Absolutely. So our thoughts with Charles as he gets ready for the recovery of the ankle injury sustained on Saturday that will end his Virginia career. We have got a football triple header for you on Saturday, and it starts at noon. Roddy Jones and I will be at the Dome in Central New York for the Wolfpack and the Orange, and then at 4 o'clock we'll send you off to Boston. Mark Herzlick and Eric Wood on the sideline with Chris Cotter upstairs. Cotter, by the way, we got to have a discussion about that. And then in prime time, Dave O'Brien, Tim Hasselbeck, Katie George, Cavaliers and Seminoles in Tallahassee. ACC Network Primetime Football presented by GEICO. Triple header Saturday. You should be recovered from your Thanksgiving dinner by then. We look forward to having it with you here on ACC Network and streaming live on the ESPN app. When we come back, the ACC Men's Soccer Champion crowned yesterday. Oh, the boys in orange. Up to their old tricks. Coach Mike Noonan's team ends up with the trophy. We'll tell you how it happened right after this.
The Packer and Durham Podcast. Packer and Durham.
Packer and Durham on a Monday. Thanksgiving coming up. One of the truly great holidays. But it's a pandemic, so be careful out there, folks. Just going to warn you. Just be careful.
Can I just say very quickly here that we got into favorite Halloween candy, and I ended up with more Chicka Sticks than I could shake a stick at,
by the way. I can't give them away.
Well, you just hold on to them, and one day I'll come pick them up. they always stay fresh, just remember. The second part, what? Go ahead.
No, I'm only going to say it. Go ahead. I'm not going to say anything. I was.
At some point, are we going to talk Thanksgiving dinner here on this program before our show ends on Wednesday?
I don't think so. I think the huddle.
People's, you know, sides and stuff.
No, okay. The huddle handled all that right. Saturday. But there's no need for us to pile on.
Did they?
The huddle was all over that.
Okay. All right, yeah. Just checking.
Yeah. By the way, soccer championship
one thing
yesterday.
We can get.
I watched this yesterday.
That's what I was saying. Yeah. Clemson wins again, 15th title for the Tigers. They were second nationally coming in, 8-2-1. Mike Noonan's team wins 2-1. Kamarni Smith ends up being the tournament's most valuable player. And Clemson allowed a goal from Valentin Noel of the Panthers. No surprise there, but Tigers go on to the win.
Let me give you a
championship assist record from Grayson Barber, by the way, too, Pac.
I saw it. I watched it. Let me give you a Timberay special. Giving all props to Timberay on this. Clemson knocked off a number one ranked national team for the 37th time in school history. That was the 37th time a Clemson team knocked off a number one ranked team. That's a Timberay special. It's happened 17 times in baseball and now 10 times in men's soccer. I will just say this. Wow. And, you know, I don't know anything about soccer. I watch it. I don't understand it. I try to learn. I'm a slow learner when it comes to soccer. And I've put together an international soccer event once, and the guys and the women have unbelievable skill. But I just don't get it, all right? So I preface that before I go forward with anything else. And I don't get it. I still don't understand offsides, the flopping. I don't understand any of it. Don't get it. But I will say this. The one thing that's phenomenal about this conference, and it goes to show you how good it is in both the men and the women's ACC championship game, you had the number one team in the country taking on the number two team in the country. Not in the conference, in the country. It was 1-2 and for the men, 1-2 for the women. And when you go down in terms of quality depth, there is nobody in the neighborhood close to the men and the women's soccer programs in this conference. And that's a testament to the coaches and the players and the ACC, which put on a great championship for both in Cary, which is a phenomenal facility. And like I said, I still don't understand the nuances of the game, even though I'm trying to learn. But the one thing you can certainly appreciate is the skill and the quality of the teams in this league, because it is spectacular.
Yeah, no doubt about that. Tigers, by the way, Kamarni Smith, the MVP, three others on the all-tournament team. Valentin Noel led a list of three Pitt Panthers on the all-tournament team as well. So congratulations to Mike Noonan's team. There's a look at the all-tournament list. And we look forward to having Coach Noonan join us tomorrow morning, Mark, on this program. He's always been a great guest and look forward to visiting again. I remember our August visits and in July when we talked with Coach Noonan that he was concerned about getting people. He had some international players on his roster, concerned about getting everybody back stateside. Remember that? Because of the pandemic. And now, on the heels of an ACC championship, what's it mean to Clemson now with this lure of spring competition out there? I think that's one of the more fascinating things that's happened out of all this is you've got these fall sports, field hockey we talked about with Karen Shelton. You start thinking about you play in the fall, you crown a champion, and now there's something else potentially out there. I'm interested to see kind of how that unfolds, to be honest with you.
I hope we have it. You know, I'm encouraged with the vaccine information that's coming out regarding COVID that perhaps that can have a trickle-down effect. Let's hope, knock on wood, as far as we move forward. I'm concerned about college basketball getting ready to start on Wednesday. And I'm not so concerned about the start. I'm more concerned about the finish and what spring could potentially look like for sports, not whether we're talking about the ACC or college sports or professional sports. We're kind of limping down to the finish line in football. But that's why I keep telling you, you have to embrace what you get. And, yeah, you can be disappointed your team is losing or maybe they lost a tough game or whatever. Hey, just embrace the fact that we have a chance to watch what these student-athletes have gone through for the ability to compete. And I still wonder, Wes, if the average fan just realizes how hard this has been to put together any kind of game, much less a season, much less a championship run. And yeah, while you may be a Syracuse football fan and bummed out, a Virginia Tech fan today going, oh, yeah, yeah, or Florida State and Clemson yakking back and forth at one another, given what happened over the weekend, man, just embrace what you can get because there are just no guarantees. As we keep telling you, COVID simply does not care. And but be careful out there.
Yeah. When we come back, hour two of the Monday show, Eric McClain joins us. Oh, yeah, and he unveils accounting. Some of you, by the way, with some fairly pointed comments about who needs to be ranked where to me over the night. Appreciate that. We'll get to Mac, though, see what he thinks of the weekend in review and also his unveiling of accounting. We'll continue on Packer and Durham.
This is the Packer and Durham Podcast.